So welcome to Spotcast. This is episode 48. My name is Tim Mitchell, and I'm in Toronto, Ontario, and I'm joined once again by Jaime Lippis Jr. in Seattle, Washington.
How's it going?
We have Jonathan Kuhlein on the line from Mr. and Mississauga, Ontario.
Hello there.
And we also have George Stromolopoulos on the phone from Toronto.
I am in Toronto today. Hello, everybody.
Toronto today. Howdy.
Hello.
All right, well, we're eager to get going here. So, Jonathan, do we have any fact check from last week, or is it all mine?
Well, actually, I did the same process you did and came up with the same two answers. So, you want to flip a coin?
Well, there's three answers here, actually. So,
all right. I'll do the first two, and you can do the last one. So,
okay. Sure.
So, 4840, last episode, we were talking about the Game of Thrones recap, and we were talking about the crimes of Cersei Lannister, and we were talking about the High Sparrow, and we couldn't quite come up with the name of the actor. It was Jonathan Pryce, played the High Sparrow in Game of Thrones, of course, great British actor. And 10827, we were talking about Alien, and again, fishing for the name of the famous spacecraft from that, which was the Nostromo.
Right. I think I said Nostromo on the show, but I wasn't sure.
I think you said that and about four other things, so it's good that you clarified.
Well, Nostromo.
Yes, the Nostradamus or something, yeah.
Yeah, and we were talking about Wandering Earth last week, and I knew that either Jaime or I had mentioned it, but I kind of discovered it on Netflix last week, I guess, and watched it. So it was on episode 35 that Jaime mentioned The Wandering Earth to us. All right, cool. So let's go through the headlines. John, you got something?
Yeah, so let's kick off with news we got. It was late last week that we may have a little casting on who is going to be the next Batman. So we talked about how Ben Affleck is out of the picture, and news came out this week. We got a story link here from Variety that Robert Pattinson, of course, very famously of the Twilight franchise, is now in negotiations to play Batman in the next incarnation. Of course, they're going with a sort of reboot, soft reboot of that franchise, and going with a little more of a younger. So what do you guys think of the idea of Robert Pattinson being our Batman?
I'm a big fan of that idea. I think it's amazing. I imagine when you say they're going for a softer reboot, are they trying to do what the Marvel Universe did with Spider-Man and just kind of make it a little bit more just lighter, to be honest with you, because the Dark Knight series was the opposite of that. I think Robert's great because one thing that I want Batman to be is a bit aloof, and I want him to be quiet, and I want that quiet to be properly earned, and I think Robert Pattinson knows how to do that. It won't take him much work to be inside his own head and kind of avoid the madness of what's happening around him.
Yeah, I think it would be good if they could capture a little bit more of the kind of mania that you would have to be somebody like Batman. And I could say that I see him playing that maybe better than a Ben Affleck or somebody like that. He has that sort of more psychological take on the character that could be good. But I'm not sure. I don't know. I think maybe he just doesn't feel as well. I mean, George, you could tell us, you've met the man. He doesn't seem as sort of square-jawed as that sort of stereotype of Batman in my mind.
Yeah, he doesn't look like the drawing, that is for sure. But I think that what he's got is the eyes, and those eyes are going to pierce through that mask, and I think Robert Pattinson would be really good. But keep this in mind. I liked Michael Keaton as Batman. I was fine with Clooney. I was totally fine with the other guy, and I love Ben.
Val Kilmer.
Yeah. I like them all. And Christian Bale, of course. So I like when different actors bring different things to Batman. My thing about any of these superhero stories, any of these Marvel or DC Universe things, is it doesn't really bother me if it isn't exactly as I want it to be, because I know they're just going to do it again in a year and a half. So they're always giving us different versions. It's always being rebooted, and they're taking over 96% of the screens in any particular theater. So there is no business without Marvel and DC. So I just like, all right, they'll do this one and it'll be different, and then we'll get another one. To me, basically, all these, you know, this Robert Pattinson, this is fan fiction. This is fanfic version of Batman. It's when all the Twilight fans freaked out when, oh my God, we got Bobby back. And I think that's going to work out fine for them.
Yeah, I guess it's an interesting. Are we all hating on Ben Affleck
now?
No,
I like Ben Affleck. Well, I would, Ben. I'm a big Ben Affleck fan.
I like Affleck too, although I did find his portrayal a little wooden. And I did think, I mean, he didn't have great material to work with. We've talked about that in the past, and we don't want to drag that one back out of the shadow. Too, but I'll be happy if Batman doesn't have, you know, large weapons or murder multiple people in this version. That's what I'm looking for.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's about time they did a good detective movie. I think that's the part that's really been missing. I've been reading those books since I was a kid, and you know, they really have never done a great Batman as detective story. I think, you know, I could see Robert Pattinson playing a very noirish Batman and doing it that way.
He works really well in David Cronenberg films, so I expect him to work well in this. I think you're right too. I think he's a a more introspective kind of guy, but not in a wooden sense. He's thoughtful, and I think it'll just be different. If they went for another superstar who, like, if you think about Clooney and Keaton, Christian Bale's in his own world, and that's a whole different series, but Keaton is odd too, but like Clooney and Ben, they're stars in the more traditional Hollywood sense, and I don't think Robert is that kind of a star, even though he was enormous. He's not that kind of a star.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think that's valuable.
Yeah, I would think of him more as a serious, not a star so much as an actor, right? Like, yeah. The difference.
Exactly. I agree with that.
Yeah. All right. What's next, John?
So a couple trailers we got this week. We got our first look at HBO's adaptation of His Dark Materials, which of course is a very famous and very popular book series, otherwise known as The Golden Compass.
That one.
It looks really kind of interesting. I must admit, I've never read those books. They are sort of marketed for YA, but I think in that world of YA, like so many other, the Harry Potters, the Divergence, Twilights we talked about, they sort of have a crossover appeal. And to have HBO do the adaptation, you know, it's kind of exciting to see what they could do with it. And the trailer looks really cool. I have no idea what's happening in it, but I know from looking at it that it looks really cool and atmospheric. And I know that there's a really good list of actors in there as well. So I think it looks pretty cool. Have you guys had a chance to give that a look?
I saw this. I want to say when I streamed the finale of Game of Thrones, I think this is the trailer that showed before
that's
it,
right.
Or maybe immediately after or something. And I immediately noticed, this is getting to fact check or real-time follow-up, X-23 from Logan.
That's exactly right. Daphne Keene.
Well, there you go. No fact check now. Real-time follow-up.
Yep.
So, yeah. It looks interesting. I also, like some others, I have not read the books. I think I sort of half watched the Golden Compass movie that came out maybe a decade ago. Uh-huh. But this looks like a very cool, different take on
it. It also has Ruth Wilson in it as Marissa. And Ruth is easily one of the best actors in the whole world. And everything, most recently, Luther and The Affair. But when, if you have Ruth Wilson and James McAvoy as your leads, and of course, they got Lin-Manuel Miranda as well. So that's, it's a really killer lineup of performers. So I don't think, and again, they didn't go for obvious stars. I think the casting alone is what's going to make this incredibly watchable.
It sounds like it's going to be really good. So they haven't released a date. It's still listed as 2019, but I mean, coming this year, this is exciting. This looks really cool.
They need something for the post Game of Thrones world.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and no coincidence they were pimping that out right during Game of Thrones final episode. By the way, don't cancel your subscription.
That's right.
Too late.
Yeah.
Spoilers for some of the other trailers. When I saw the dates, I was like, oh, okay, yeah, I'm going to go ahead and cancel now then.
All right.
And the other trailer that we got this week that I thought was really cool was the first full trailer for the CW's Batwoman series. So we obviously knew this was coming. They did the backdoor pilot in the fall with the crossover series and the CW DC Universe shows. And a really cool looking trailer for this too. Obviously set up the first, we talked about this last week, the first LGBTQ main character in one of these shows. And a really neat sort of atmosphere to it. So I was really excited about that. What do you guys think?
So I know they toss around these superheroes and change identities and stuff like that throughout the books and stuff like that. But to me, Batwoman is always, or Batgirl, I guess, is what I'm thinking of. So this is a different character, right?
This is a different
iteration.
Right.
So is this character from the books, like, or is this something they've made up for the movie kind of thing?
No, she's a character from the DC Universe. And there's been some actually really, really excellent Batwoman comic books over the last decade or so. From my what I've read of it, and it's a decent amount of stuff, it looks pretty bang on. They've obviously sort of concocted this world wherein she has sort of assumed the mantle in lieu of Bruce Wayne. Obviously, in the comic books, they're never going to cancel Batman because Batman's Batman. So she exists in parallel. But in this, the idea is that she's, Bruce has gone missing or left Gotham unattended, so therefore she sort of takes up the mantle and runs with it in her own way, and it looks really cool. And Ruby Rose, of course, is going to be the star. So I'm in.
So she mentions her uncle. Is she like, she's the niece of Batman, or
I think she's supposed to be first cousin.
She's Kate Kane, and there was the crossover in Arrow, right? Was where I think this whole thing started.
And this
is what gives us the spinoff.
Yeah. So I guess if you add it up, I mean, now we're sort of balancing it out. There's, because Arrow is going to be off the air, only 10 episodes in its final season next year. So this will sort of assume its place in the lineup. So, we'll have Supergirl and Batwoman and Flash and Legends of Tomorrow as the before sort of pinnacles of the DC
pillars,
universe.
Pillars.
And Nancy Drew. I know that's not technically sci-fi.
And Veronica
fantasy.
Mars. Don't forget Veronica Mars.
No, that's on Hulu. That's coming out of the Hulu.
And Dora the Explorer is coming back.
That's true.
Wait, are these all part of the Arrowverse? Because I really only follow Supergirl. And when they do the crossovers, you know, 1 week a year. So.
Nancy Drew is not part of the as far as I understand it anyway, the that
I was just picking up women characters. Yeah. So my tweet here. So I saw this tweet, and there's going to be a running theme throughout the show. But like, you know, whether you're on side or off side with this latest season. But this and I basically put this in order that I found it. And this is well before the final episode aired. But this is from Stephen King, and he offering his opinion. You know, as you know, discerning writer of fiction and whatever about his position of Game of Thrones. He says he loves it. He loves Danny going bug shit over King's Landing. And he says, even though there's a lot of negativity, he sort of said, like, his position is that people are hating on it because they just don't want it to end, which is kind of interesting. So
I think we'll get deep into that in our main for today, because I think we all have a take on how this all wrapped up. But, you know, he's not wrong. I think a lot of people get really bent out of shape at anything coming to a conclusion. And we've seen that play out. You know, you can name the finales, even finales that were pretty good, you know, the Breaking Bads and the Mad Men and, you know, Lost, and, you know, people just, you know, they build these things up in their head and they're never satisfied, and they do get frustrated, and they work themselves into a frenzy. You know, I'll be interested to see how many people come back at this 10 years from now and see how they feel about it then.
Right, right. And we get the brand spinoff, right?
Yeah.
Right. Jaime, you got something for us?
Yeah, speaking of spinoffs or lightly like that, you'd say sequels or prequels, I guess. The Dark Crystal Age of Resistance for Netflix. We have some photos, and they look great because it reminds me of exactly what I saw from Jim Henson's Creature Shop way back in the 80s.
Yeah, and this is coming out this summer, right?
August. Ooh, that's a good, sorry, oh, thank you. Thank August, you. Yeah, yeah, I couldn't remember when, but it looks like it's pretty spot on. Hopefully, you know, if this is a good sign that they're going to capture the spirit of that movie.
Alicia Vikander, Simon Pegg, Helena Bonham Carter, all part of it. And I agree, those photos looked amazing because we don't ever get to see that. Everything is so heavily CGI'd now that when you look at some of these models and these characters, you're like, wow, this is a throwback. This is going to be really fun.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's such a distinctive vision. Like, there really has not been, I mean, maybe Labyrinth a little bit because of the same creature house, but boy, it really has a unique look. It really takes you to that universe right away.
Yeah.
Yeah, as excited as I was before, it just a little more, and the more they show, the more I want.
Yeah, now I have to go back and watch Dark Crystal. I don't even remember what it was about. I mean, I vaguely remember, but...
Yeah, I might have it here in 3 or 4 different formats if you want to borrow one.
Yeah, sure.
I would like the laser disc, please.
Yeah.
All right. What's next, Jaime?
Next, we have the Westworld Season 3 trailer, which, spoilers, they say coming in 2020. So I say, yep, I can go ahead and not hang on to HBO for the moment. But it's...
Look at all the money you're saving, Jaime. Think of all the money you're saving.
Well, he's going to put that into other streaming services that are coming.
Yeah, that's like true. CBS All Access, for example. Like, we'll get my money inevitably, you know, with other things we're going to talk about.
Did I hear that Aaron Paul is being cast in Season 3?
That's right. Jesse Pinkston from Breaking Bad is the main character of this trailer, at the very least. I don't know what his role will be in Season 3.
So I've only watched the first half of Season 1, and I just stayed away from it for whatever reason, and then I was busy watching all the other shows. And then I started to watch it, and I thought, this show is fantastic. And then I paused because everybody said Season 2 sucked. And I thought, I don't want to invest so much into Season 1 if Season 2 is that bad. Can anybody corroborate or counter
it? It wasn't that bad. It was different. I mean, the first season was amazing.
Yeah.
And I even went back and watched the old James Brolin, and I forgot the name of the other Benjamin Dan Benson, not Ben, John Benjamin, David Benjamin, original movie with Yul Brynner as the robot, and that was really cool. The second season was different, but it wasn't horrible, right?
Well, the first season was predicated on a mystery, and the second season, once that mystery bubble had burst, I think a lot of people were looking for what was the great next mystery, and they tried to sort of work in a new mystery, but it didn't have the same payoff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think that it was, definitely. Again, I think it was expectations, right? Once you put something on the table, and we just talked about that for Game of Thrones, once people had that on the table, and then they were looking for something that was going to build on that, it's hard. It's hard work doing that kind of stuff. Build building on something that, you know, has that kind of greatness to it. And I don't think a lot of people were satisfied with where it went. Although you're right, Tim, I think it was really good.
Mm. It's like kind of Mr. Robot too. Once you've seen season one, what can they do? How can they top that? Right.
Yeah.
You know, Fight Club kind of stuff. All right. And you have some sad news from you, Jonathan.
Yeah. It's sad news for you, Tim. And I know that there are fans. I must admit, I've only watched one episode of the series, but we got the news this week that Humans is done. So AMC's sci-fi series.
Like done. They're not even doing a season four.
No.
Right?
Yeah. Season
three was pretty
season
bad.
Three. Yeah. Well, there you go. Maybe that was the reason. But yeah, we got news that it's not going to be back. So I guess it's been airing on Channel 4 in the state in the UK as well. And so they've decided not to put any more money into that. So it's done.
Yeah. It was a good show. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah. Did you enjoy all of it or just parts of it?
Well, like I said, the first couple of seasons were really good. But, you know, and the characters, the actors who play the robots were really, really spot on. Even the girl, who's the girl from Black Panther, the crazy scientist sister? She played, I think I told you.
Oh, Letitia Wright?
Yeah, she played a kid that was so enamored with the robots that she actually, you know, kind of identified with them so much that she even wore blue contacts and became, like, acted like she was a robot kind of thing, or a human, whatever they call them.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, they were always trying to find their identities, and I think that was who they are and their creator and all that kind of stuff, and it got kind of weird, you know.
I read the quote from the Corona, the creators, who said that he recognizes that there were some cliffhanger endings and that there were a lot of threads that were left hanging, so maybe one day they'll be able to fix it and answer those questions. And they asked that if anybody out there had any money, I think they said a few million quid, and you like AI, that they're all available to do it again. So basically there's enough tech people out there who are interested in this who can afford that in a heartbeat. So Humans is only gone off Channel 4.
Yeah.
Oh, true. That's true. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Needs a Save the Expanse style campaign, right, for the fans. It's doable. I mean, Amazon picked up that one, right?
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
Where was that? Where was that when my Firefly went off the air?
Right.
Yeah.
But then we got Serenity.
That's true. That's true.
So I just finished reading Eric Idle's autobiography, and he talks a lot about Spamalot, so which leads us into our next story, in a manner of speaking.
Yeah. So in the fine tradition of turning movie and other properties into musical theater, they're doing a Back to the Future musical because money. So this had been rumored for a while, and it is an interesting idea. It is now confirmed. It's happening. They're doing a 12-week engagement starting in February 2020 in London's West End. I guess if you think about it, the movie does certainly have a lot of musical cues. Obviously, the Huey Lewis songs are very key.
Yeah, Johnny Be Good, yeah.
And the Johnny Be Good piece and the dance scene at the end between his parents. There are certainly musical cues, but I'll be curious to see how they roll that whole thing into an entire musical. Any thoughts on whether that would make your radar for something to go to the theater for?
It's Alan Silvestri who composed the original in Back to the Future, but it's also Glenn Ballard, who's an incredible songwriter, who is working with Alan on this. So I think it's going to be neat just to watch them reimagine some of this, because they're next level. It is Bob Zemeckis and it's also Bob Gale who are putting this together. Which I think didn't they try to do this a bunch of years ago and couldn't get it?
They did. Yeah, they had talked about it in 2012 that it was something that they were working on, and then they actually scheduled it a premiere date, but it never happened, and it had sort of really been off the radar. I think everybody thought that idea was dead, and then it popped up this week as not only is it being resurrected, but it's being resurrected in like 8 months. So that's a pretty dramatic change from where they left it.
Dude, it's playing in Manchester, I think, right? And is one of the great musical cities in the world. So I can't wait to see who will pop on stage. Maybe they'll have guests like in Toronto when they do the Nutcracker, and they have all these strange guests appear in the party scene. This is what I'm hoping for in Manchester. Sean Ryder, Noel Gallagher, Liam Gallagher. I think this is going to be great.
Just not at the same time. You can't put them on the stage at the same time.
That is certainly true.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. Well, again, who knows? There have been a lot of hits made out of these things, these other properties. And I guess the investment of all those key players, it could be good.
Yeah, and it's Ollie Dobson, right? So Ollie was in Bat Out of Hell. So this person knows how to do this. That's playing the Michael J. Fox role of Marty. So clearly, it is really high power talent. And I've seen a bunch of these musicals where they've recreated IP, and most of them have failed. This one, I think, is actually going to be really fun. And I just saw Michael J. Fox the other day, and we were talking a bit about it. And they think it's cool. He thinks it's going to be cool.
Nice. Yeah. Our next bit, this dropped today, so I don't know if you guys had a chance to look at this. So we got this information from Vanity Fair. Vanity Fair dropped, and they do this, it seems, every movie that comes out. Star Wars movie is coming out. They send Andy Leibovitz to the set. She takes portraits and does set photos. And then they do the sort of insider scoop piece on what's going to be some of the things going on in the new movie. So they're doing this for, of course, the last Skywalker. What's it called?
Rise of Skywalker.
I want to call it Last Skywalker. That was the last movie.
The Rise of Skywalker. Some Return of the Son of Skywalker.
Yeah, exactly. And so the pictures are beautiful. I don't know if you guys have had a chance to look at those. Of course, Andy is one of the most talented photographers in the world. But there's also kinds of little bits of news in here. So, you know, they talk about, they talk to Isaacs. They talk to Adam Driver about, you know, what's going on in Kylo Ren's head. They talk to Daisy Ridley about, you know, Rey's journey. We got some clarity now. We know that it takes place a year after the events of Last Jedi. So, you know, some interesting stuff mixed in here with some pretty cool photos, and then some pictures that sort of show some new characters and some new locales. It's a nice little sneak preview.
Yeah, so it looks like I have to buy several different covers. And
yeah, of course you do.
As usual.
Yeah. Yeah. What did you guys think of all this? The weird horses seem to be back.
Weird horses? Where is that?
If you scroll down in the link that I put in the show notes, if you scroll down, there's a picture of John Boyega and another actor.
And her name, that woman with the name.
Yeah, who are riding these sort of weird horsey beasts with tusks. I mean, the visuals look really cool. There are some sort of little sneak preview-y stuff in here, but is it whet your appetite for anything more? Or I don't have to ask the three of you, you guys are locked for tickets anyways, but do you think that anything in here intrigue you?
I just think it's interesting that they came back so quickly, because they thought they were going to put the whole Star Wars universe on pause for a moment after Solo, and I guess they felt like they very quickly hit saturation in the market. But I talked to some people who are closer to it all, and they realized that the studio just really messed up the Solo launch, and they think that if it was done a little bit differently, that movie would have had a bigger audience, and then they would have maintained the output pace that they were on. And so there were a lot of people who thought that Star Wars would just pause for a moment, and something changed internally clearly when they realized that there's a market and an appetite for this now.
But we've talked about it on this pod before, about the idea of sort of Star Wars exhaustion, the idea that they're rolling out a movie a year as opposed to one every 3 years, the way that they had over some of the other parts of the franchise. George, what's your take on the idea that it's too much of a good thing?
I think if your quality is high, you're going to just continue to do it. You know, I mean, how many Spider-Mans have come out? Even, you know, the Spider-Man universe has changed dramatically. Watching the Avengers thing, I personally am fatigued beyond belief on most of it. What I'm looking for now is something really different. I think the conversation around Logan showed that there was an appetite for a different kind of film. And I don't think Star Wars did different enough. And I think that they kind of fell behind the Guardians and the Avengers plan, which was these were funnier movies. The audience wanted the same kind of thing. Star Wars didn't deliver that. So I think that Star Wars has got to find a way to keep up, because that's what people want to see currently if they want to play in that space. Because just to say Star Wars, it'll get them a huge bunch of money, but it won't be the $2 billionaire, which is what everybody's posting now is the mark.
Yeah.
I totally get why there's fatigue, because I don't think the movies are that different and they're not that funny. And this is what people seem to want when they get into a sci-fi and fantasy.
Yeah. They're also, I think it's the issue. I think even with Avengers, which is extremely fantastical, there is a grounding to it. You know, they do try and keep a human element. I think the Star Wars movies in the last few have felt very distant, very on a different plane, and not necessarily grounded in, as you say, humor and character and those things. It's very much about the universe.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that they are being forced to do the one thing they've never had to do before, which is to do a complete rethink, because they've been able to just trade off the Star Wars thing for a long time. And now they're going to have to figure this. You talked about it, how there are new characters, new animals, new worlds. Like they've clearly realized that there has to be more, because the name alone isn't going to be enough.
Yeah. And we'll talk about it as we get into the Game of Thrones discussion. But the next movies that are coming in the Star Wars universe after this are created by Benioff and Weiss.
Yeah.
So that'll be interesting to see what the reaction is to those, given how the reaction to Game of Thrones finished up. So a couple more things just to wrap us up on our headlines. This one made me laugh. So we're getting promotion for Stranger Things Season 3. And one of the things that they're doing is some promotional crossover. So apparently these are not cash changing hands. They're not necessarily product placement. But as Stranger Things Season 3 returns on Netflix on the 4th of July, they're setting it in 1985. One of the big events of 1985 was New Coke.
Woo!
Yeah.
Which doesn't need to come back ever, please.
So, in the spirit of that, the good folks at Coca-Cola are bringing back New Coke.
The actual Coke recipe and all that nonsense?
The actual New Coke smoother recipe from 1985 will...
This is like bringing disco back. I'm sorry. I have to object.
It will be available for a limited time this summer. Actually, I think it's available starting now and through the summer as part of a sort of a promotional crossover, because they expect so many people who never had a chance to experience New Coke will wonder what the big deal was and will want to run to the store and get a New Coke.
Tim, are you going to crack one open just to test it to see if you're if you feel the same?
You know, I might. I mean, I grew up on Coke. I used to like buy a big one of those big bottles of Coke every day and just, you know, go hang out at the park and do other things with, you know, that I need to quench my thirst
for. That's right.
But the New Coke was just, it was, we were glad it went away and they brought back
Coke
Classic.
It was a betrayal.
They called Coke Classic.
It was a betrayal when it happened. If New Coke had launched in the era of Twitter, people would have just been killing themselves, birthing kittens, and like the anger would be so enormous. But you remember the Onion article a little while back that said the U.S. Department of Retro warns that we are quickly running out of past. This is where we're at when New Coke is coming back as a positive.
Yep. I mean, are you old enough to remember New Coke?
Yeah, I was going to tell Tim, it's like some of us are old enough to remember Crystal Pepsi.
Oh, yeah.
That came out in the 90s. However, given my age, I cannot confirm nor deny whether I've ever had New Coke, because I really don't remember what happened when I was like 5.
Do we know what year that was that it came out?
85. 85 was the year of New Coke.
Yeah. So I was 4. So maybe.
Did you ever have Sarasota's or Zima, the other amazing?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Something different. Yeah, I've had Zima.
But we have some real-time follow-up here. The actress that we're trying to remember the name of, her name is Naomi Aki, and she plays a character called Janna in the new Rise of Star Wars.
Oh, there you go. Oh, she's the one in the portrait with in the picture with
Return
John Boyega.
Son of John Skywalker. Yeah, that one.
Cool. Janna. And our last bit, I just wanted to call your attention, because I don't know if you guys have had a chance to catch up with this yet, but Into the Spider-Verse, the Academy Award-winning Best Animated Picture from this year, is coming to Netflix next month.
Yay! I get to watch the end of it. I saw half of it on the plane on the way to Hawaii, but
I loved it. This was one of my very favorite movies, probably my second favorite movie of last year, maybe even my favorite movie of last year. So I'm excited to watch it again, and I encourage you guys and everybody else to watch it.
I loved it.
You may not know this, but the Strombo show starts almost every episode with the beginning soundtrack from that movie.
That is correct. Right. That is correct. Mike Sullivan, who's been our engineer, I've been working with him for almost 15 years. This is Spider-Man is his life. Spider-Man in boxing at Sully's Boxing Gym in Toronto. And so he is always trying to find a fit that in.
Nice.
I loved it. I got to be honest with you. I loved it so much. And I've been so bored of superhero movies of late. I have a major criticism of most of them, which is that none of the characters are real. In that Thor is Tony Stark, is all the other characters, is in that it's, you know, kind of funny, kind of whatever. There's no real character rules for them anymore. Mm. Hulk has no character. They're just the same guy skinned differently. When I watched the Spider-Man into the Spider-Verse, that was a completely true telling of that world. I thought it was so strong. Even if you weren't fans of this kind of stuff, you would love it, because it had a story truth and a character truth that most modern films don't do in this world.
I felt very similar to you, George, but for me, it was the animation.
Oh, it was crazy.
I love Pixar and I love DreamWorks and I love the work that those studios do, but I felt like there was a homogeny of animated work that has really taken over the last few years, and this was the first thing that really broke out for me. It was such a dynamic and interesting, it was truly a comic book come to life, and for me, that was the real breath of fresh air. You're right, it was a great human story, it was really well told in that way, but for me, it was just such a unique visual storytelling experience.
Yeah, it looked really cool, I agree.
Had they not done that kind of thing anything in the books before, John?
Do you mean the story or the?
Well, the sort of like coming out from left field with this sort of idea. Yeah, yeah. Because wasn't this a sort of unique way of telling the Spider-Man story?
Yeah, I mean, Miles Morales, the lead character from the book, is a character in comics and has been for a while. So they've sort of adapted that, and even the idea of the Spider-Verse has been done in comics in that form, not that exact story, of course, but there is the idea that each universe has its own incarnation of Spider-Man. The story, the person might be different, but the story is the same. It's the idea of with great power comes great responsibility. There's usually a tragedy that helps spark them to realize that they have a responsibility to do the right thing. And sort of that's the theme that runs through this movie, and it's the theme that runs through those comic books. There are different iterations where there's a female Spider character, or there's, you know, one who, like Miles, is biracial. There are ones that have, you know, different backstories. They're ones set in the past or the future. But this one, it really brought a really vivid and very, very likable character together with Miles, and then a really fun supporting cast, including a very funny Nick Cage moment as well. So it really just sort of combined in a lot of the same way. Like, it did the right thing. Everybody at this point knows the Spider-Man story. So it tells you the Spider-Man story in about 10 seconds.
Yeah.
And just lets the story be what it is. In the same way that Batman should never be retold again, just take it for granted that we have a certain amount of knowledge to bring to the table, and it was great. They didn't beat us over the head. They just told a good story.
Yeah, cool.
And now you can watch it on Netflix.
Yay.
Yeah, I was wondering about that, and then I realized it's probably Sony's property.
Yeah.
Under the movie rights.
Yep. I thought about the same thing, because I know we talked about how Disney's contract is expiring and they're not going to put Captain Marvel on Netflix, and the deal is up. And I thought, oh, that's funny. I thought that wasn't, and then it occurred to me the exact same thing. Oh yeah, that's right. It's not a Marvel movie.
No.
Oh right. Okay. And Sony's not coming out with their own channel soon?
Oh, I'm sure they are.
I'm sure
it'll be part. Push, Tim. They'll hear you.
I'm sure it'll be part of the complete rethink of the PS5 or whatever they end up calling it.
Have their own production studio, right, George?
They do, and they have that. They have Sony Pictures Classics. They have their own distribution. They have this rethink, or everybody's talking about the rethink of this unit. I think that this unit, if they do it right, could be a real game changer, and maybe this is where Sony launches their OTT player. I haven't heard any rumors to suggest that, but I'm sure they could build something into that unit.
Yeah. Well, Jaime's well on his way to collecting them all, at least for a month at a time. So,
nice. Yeah, Thanos style. I've had just about all the darn streaming services. And there's new ones we talk about all the time. I think at least once a month, we're like, oh, guess what? This other company is starting a streaming service.
Yeah, we missed you last week, buddy. We talked about the Disney complete acquisition of the powers over Hulu and all kinds of stuff. And I was thinking, oh, Jaime should be here for this.
Now, don't the Marvel properties that were on Netflix, isn't there a condition which says they can't be repurposed on another OTT player? So I don't even think Disney is able to do, at least for 7 years or something like that.
It was 2 year contract that basically says it's an exclusive to Netflix for 2 years after the completion of the final series. So I assume that's Jessica Jones.
Right.
So once Jessica Jones wraps, it's a 2 year moratorium on those characters.
Okay. All right.
Do we have a new season coming up for Jessica Jones?
Yeah, that would be the final Marvel Netflix crossover.
Netflix. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so that'll be the last one, and then once that's done, they'll exist as they are, and there won't be any more. And they're selling off props. I saw a story last week. They're selling off the props for Daredevil, which made me sad because I guess they're either going to make new ones if they come back to it or go somewhere completely different with it.
So for someone like me who's never seen a single episode of Daredevil, where do I have to go now to see it?
It's staying on Netflix. They're not taking it off that I know of because they co-produced it, right? So for them, they'll keep it on there as long as it's doing ratings wise. I wonder if at some point they will just kibosh it because it is the enemy at a certain point. Mm-hmm. But then their financial investment in it, if it's bringing revenue, they'll keep it going.
Yeah. So before we move on to the Game of Thrones, I'm curious, since I got George here. George, what do you think about this death by 1,000 cuts of having to have 27 subscriptions to all these different services? You know, we all wanted our cable services to be a little bit more open in terms of what we could watch. But now it just seems like we're going to spend way more money on TV shows than we were before.
We always were, guys, because in Canada especially, all the TV players who were losing audience on network are also the same people who control your access to the internet. They're all the ISPs. So they were never in a million years going to let us get away with anything. And everybody started to champion the idea of a la carte cable, but this is all this is a la carte. And if you start looking at the new prices for Netflix, they went up like $3 or $4, right? Mm-hmm. It's going to cost cost you triple to have all this stuff. And if somebody doesn't figure out sports rights properly, I know Dazen's doing it, but if someone doesn't figure out sports rights properly, if you want to get your NBA package, your NFL, NHL, and all that, it's going to cost you a fortune. And all that's going to do is drive an enormous amount of people right back to downloading. They're going to find their mm-hmm. own system. And I know there's tons of free streamers out there right now, and third-party hardware pieces that you can watch all these channels. And they had an opportunity to be consumer-friendly, and they just decided not to be. And people are going to have to choose one or the other and share passwords like all my friends do.
Yep.
So what does that do for you, Jaime, in the States with the sports packages and stuff?
Yeah, live sports was a big reason why I kept Comcast as the TV provider for a very long time. Since moving almost a year ago, I've, over the last several months, been using YouTube TV for largely the same kind of functionality, but way nicer. And it's also something I can just easily shut off without having to call customer support, wait for an hour, and beg to turn off my account. Right.
Oh, so right. Okay. Yeah.
There's an aspect to it where, you know, even though I'm not very happy that it'll be $10 more in like 3 weeks from now, I have the option of switching over to like Hulu's live TV package for that sort of thing. And so hoping competition of some sort will keep that relatively sane, even though I do fully acknowledge that live sports are a huge, huge money driver for live TV. And so I imagine I will always have to pay or do without.
Mm-hmm. So what does YouTube TV cost you in the States?
I want to say it's like $40 right now. Is going up to 50 the next billing cycle.
Wow. How many channels do you get with
that? They add a few more channels. Sorry?
How many channels is that?
Like a bazillion. It's a huge number. It's pretty comparable to a cable TV package, except you don't really have to play games to get the full HD quality. And with YouTube in particular, it's really good about giving you unlimited PVR capability.
Right.
So there's like no reason not to just like tap the plus sign on anything that you're even vaguely remotely interested in watching.
That's great.
So what do you do in the States, George, when you're down there?
Legally, I use Apple TV, and that's all I'm going to say. I have, I try not to watch too much television there, except most of the stuff I'm watching is on Netflix and Amazon Prime, and I'm using my Apple TV to connect me to all of that stuff, so I'm using it that way. I just signed up for the YouTube Premium version up here, but I have not switched to YouTube TV. I didn't really spend that much time, truthfully, looking into it, but now that you're saying that sounds interesting to me. I might look at it. I have my cable package here, which I'm waiting, and my cable package will be canceled the moment the Raptors get eliminated. So it's, I only have cable in my home in Toronto right now for the NBA playoffs. And as soon as that's over, I hope that's another 2.5 weeks. I'm going to cancel my cable right after that.
All right.
Mental note: talk Raptors with George in after show.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. We should open with the Raptors, like we did last week.
That's true.
Seemed to do well for them, actually. Actually, they lost last week when we talked about them, so maybe
they did. They were winning. You called me out and asked how they were doing. I'm like, well, they're winning in the third. And yeah, they collapsed and lost, but still, they've drawn back. They're back even again. So we'll see.
Absolutely, so fun.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to the main part of our show here today, which is talk about Game of Thrones, the finale. Oh my God, I can't believe it's over. The Iron Throne.
So we pick up where we left off. King's Landing's a wreck. The Unsullied are murdering their prisoners in the streets. Jon is aghast. Tyrion is aghast. Tyrion goes and discovers his brother and his sister are dead. Jaime and Cersei are dead. Daenerys gives a speech that looks very much like something that Hitler or Mussolini would have done, and saying that she's going to take over the rest of the world and free the rest of the world from the tyranny of other people. Tyrion says, I'm not on board with that, and throws away his hand symbol and is arrested. He ends up basically being imprisoned as a traitor. Jon has a discussion with Tyrion and has a discussion with Arya about, you know, the turn of events and what they've just witnessed, and then has this very, very amazing scene where they're basically in the throne room. Daenerys has the vision, just like her vision from season two, where she walks into the throne room and, you know, the ash is falling, and she walks over to the throne, and this time she actually puts her hand on the Iron Throne, and she gets this sort of maniacal look on her face that she's
almost licking her lips, you know?
Yeah, like she's really into it. And then Jon shows up before she can sit down. They talk about, you know, what this means and what she's done. And in a scene that only one of us could have predicted last week, Jon stabs her and kills her before she can carry out her.
So wait, they embrace, right? So George, we always have this issue with Jonathan because he can see through plot lines right. like hours ahead of the rest of right. us. But so
I called it last week. I'd like to point out, I called exactly what happened in last week's episode.
Really?
I did. Oh, okay. You said, what's going to happen? And I said, John is going to kill Danny and then he's going to end up in the North. I had no idea how.
See,
I did not call Bran, but I did call those two things.
I knew he was going to kill Danny, but I loved how John did the right thing. He gave her every opportunity.
Yeah.
Every opportunity. And then John got banished to the North, which is exactly what was going to happen because what's real life like, guys? Real life is no good deed goes unpunished. And if you do it honorably and you do it right, you're going to get screwed in the end. And he ends up right back where he started because that's how the world really works. And I love that they did that to John.
Yeah. So I want to circle back to that. That's a really good point, George. I'm going to circle back to that. So there's the death scene, which then leads to Drogon, the dragon, basically senses that something has happened to his mother, comes up into the throne room, looks down, sees Daenerys on the floor, gives her a couple of pokes, realizes she's dead, looks like he's going to scorch Jon, which would have been really a cool moment.
The screen should have gone black and the show should have been over.
Yeah, yeah. It was a kind of a cool moment. He sort of gives Jon a sniff and then sort of lets out this bellow of rage and melts the Iron Throne. You know, wow, what a subtle metaphor. And
it wasn't very accessible, I have to say, first of all.
And then picks up Daenerys' body and flies off towards the east. And then we cut to black, or fade to black, and then we pick up our story weeks later. We don't have a sense, but we get that pretty quickly that it's weeks later.
Wasn't it 5 years later? I thought it was 5 years later.
You thought it was what?
5 years later.
Like, no, that was a different
Avengers.
Movie.
Avengers. Oh, sorry.
So we only can judge it by beard time. John's beard is longer. Tyrion's beard is longer. They look a little bedraggled. We'll say, 3 weeks later. The idea is that all the lords and ladies of Westeros have gathered in the dragon pits to discuss what's to be done with Jon Snow and what's to be done with Tyrion and how they decide what should happen to the throne now that both Cersei and Daenerys are dead. And so they have this discussion where somehow Tyrion, who is a prisoner of Grey Worm at this point, he somehow is the one who ends up deciding how the king is chosen by sort of saying, we should all meet like this. We should have a discussion. And he basically proclaims that whoever has the best story should win and that Bran Stark as Bran the Broken should be the ruler of the kingdoms. So they have the little, discussion. There's some good, we'll talk about some of the little side conversations there afterwards, but they have some good little side conversations and then they all agree with the exception of Sansa who says, I agree that he should be the king, but not of our area. The North will remain independent. And so she at that point is essentially declaring herself queen of the North.
I thought for sure she was going to say, I'll do it.
Yeah. Well, there's a funny moment. We'll talk about that with her uncle and there's some good stuff in there to get into as we wrap this up. But Bran, of course, they nominate him. He accepts, but he accepts on the condition that Tyrion is going to be his hand. Because as George said, no good deed goes unpunished. Mm-hmm. If you're going to make me the king, then you get to be my hand. And then we sort of fast forward into this, they're rebuilding King's Landing. Everybody's moved in. I don't know how much more time is supposed to be in there. They basically are into in Wayne's World? The happy ending? The very happy ending? They basically give everybody a happy ending. So Grey Worm sails off with the Unsullied for Noth. Tyrion reorganizes the King's Council with Brienne and Bronn and Davos and Sam are all on the new council. Sansa gets to go up north and she becomes the queen. Arya goes off to explore. And Jon, as his punishment for murdering the queen, is sent to join the Night's Watch. Back to the Night's Watch. What he's watching for, we can discuss as well. And he is reunited with his beloved ghost. And
who he pets this time.
Who he actually acknowledges, which is a nice touch. And then he and Tormund and the rest of the wildlings head north of the wall. So I guess he's not part of the Night's Watch. This sort of weird, surprising surprisingly happy ending for the show.
Mm-hmm. I loved it. I'm like the only one in the world who loved pretty much all of it. That last episode.
The Stark, why? What was it that worked for you?
Because the Starks were the people that the Starks were universally rooted for by everybody around the world. They were the Starks, and when they killed Ned in the very beginning of this whole series, people were beside themselves. And all the Starks had these incredible journeys. They went through incredible pain, and in the very end, the Starks are the ones that should rule above all because they're the right family, and they did it. And you know, we're talking about independence, and the North was never part, should never have been ruled by Cersei or by her pops or anybody. So that, or Robert. So that had to happen. So all the things that should have happened in my mind. And Dany, when people freaked out that Dany went bananas, it was like her dad was the Mad King, her brother was mad, and she, above all these things, thought she had a divine right to the throne. Anybody in the history of the world who thinks they've had a divine right to the throne is mad and causes incredible carnage. So Dany, like, history has already told us what was going to happen, you know, at this stage of Game of Thrones. And I love the fact, to your point, that, you know, Tyrion, you've got to be what you always wanted to be, or what you always deserved, which was to be the person who controls King's Landing. He was the one Lannister that never got any respect in that town.
True.
And yeah, he finally, because, you know, the Kingslayer ultimately is the Queenslayer as well, because he brought her down there. So Tyrion, the one guy that never got the family love, gets control of the town ultimately. And the Bran, the broken thing, by making this a king that would be humble. Also, this king can fly amazing. So, right, there's, to me, the only thing I didn't like about it was the dragon business, because I was just like, okay, for real? Now the dragon, what? That didn't do it for me. I thought the killing was amazing. The weird 2-week jump, I agree, was a bit strange. But the way all the characters got it at the end, I loved it. The mountain could not, or the hound could not kill the mountain. So they had to die together to set this up. All the things that needed to happen. And there's no finale season that I've ever seen that is anything other than, hey, let's just tie some bows. There's no finale seasons can't actually move story. They just got to start tying things up. And I thought that they did a pretty decent job of it. And I loved the way this ended. And I thought Sansa, you know, is the rightful queen. And the fact that she gets to run the North, perfect, where she belongs.
Yeah.
My diatribe.
Gentlemen.
I'm going to go with George on this one, which I acknowledge is also kind of against the grain in that I did like the finale episode. I think issues I end up having with it are largely predicated on issues with this last season in particular, right? Yeah. So if you just say, okay, we've got this final episode, you got to work with what you've got, now go. And I think they did a pretty good job of doing that. And subsequent rewatching before the subscription ran out, largely rewatched, we started rewatching from season one and, you know, skipping parts that we didn't, you know, need to see again, or, you know, going and seeing best scenes. And we largely saw almost the entire series again. And rewatching it in sort of semi-binge mode, it's like, oh, yeah, they actually spend a lot of time showing us Bran's opinion about stuff really early on. And so the coming out of left field for Bran is really only if you haven't been rewatching these things, which I admit I haven't, right? I have not, like, done the seasonal re-binge like some folks do, right? Like, every season that comes out, they start watching all of them again. And I think I appreciated Bran the Builder here, and Bran the Broken as being the right choice for many of the reasons that were talked about here.
Yeah, it's interesting. I have a clip here. I don't know if I just saw this just before we started recording about an hour ago. And it's Gwendolyn, I don't remember her last name,
Christy.
And the Costa Waldo guy talking to Mario on Extra about their predictions. And I don't know when this was shot or whatever, but it was shot well before, I think sometime around season 6 or 7. And she predicts that, like, you know, they're all going, well, it's going to be Danny or it's going to be John or whatever. This is what's Costa Waldo's first name again?
Nikolai,
Jamie, the guy who plays Jamie.
Yep.
He was saying that that, you know, he thought it was, you know, the obvious choices, right? It's going to be John. It's going to be the Night King was still around, so he thought the Night King might be the one that kicks ass in the long run. But she says in this clip, if you watch it, that she says, why do we think it has to be somebody like that? Why can't it be somebody from left field like Bran, right? And she says, you know, all this sort of stuff that he's been doing all along could lead him to be the right choice to lead the the Seven Kingdoms, right? And the last thing that what's his name again? Nikolai.
Nikolai
says. The last thing Nikolai says is, so then he made Jamie push him out the window, and she says, yeah. So this is why I've got this link here saying she got all timey wimey on this thing, because like, how do we know that it wasn't Bran in his own sort of way forcing this whole future to happen?
You mean like a Judas Iscariot, he was destined to be a trigger, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But Bran is the reason that the whole thing went ape in the first place. So
right, yeah.
it does make sense. I mean, didn't Vegas have Bran number one, which led speculation?
They did. That's a great discussion. Is so for the longest time, and they did have open betting on this in Vegas, Bran was at an astonishingly high level of bet. And everyone was like, why? The favorites were, you know, of course, Jon and Daenerys, Arya, Sansa, you know, they were sort of the obvious players. And Bran was sort of a left field bet in a lot of people's minds, but not Vegas's, which makes you have to wonder, you know, again, it takes hundreds and hundreds of people to produce these shows. Did someone at some point talk? Is, you know, like Vegas gets these things,
totally,
right?
Totally. Yeah. Because Vegas isn't smart in terms of, they're not like thoughtful. They're in the information business. I think you're totally right. Somebody said something.
Yeah. Because it just seems right. So random and to be so bang on at the odds they had it at. Like, it was not good odds. It wasn't like a 50-1 long shot. It was like 4-2 or something. Like, it was something really, really low.
Mm, interesting.
Yeah.
I have another clip here, too, from Elizabeth Warren. And have I got her name right? OAC?
Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the greatest.
Yep.
Yeah. Anyway,
AOC.
AOC. Okay, sorry. So, Senator Elizabeth Warren and Senator AOC. I'm just going to say
Congresswoman.
Congresswoman. Okay. They were talking about the last episode, too. And of course, they're saying, like, of course, this show is like written by men. Oh my God. No wonder Sansa doesn't end up in the top chair, right?
Mm.
But yeah, it's an interesting little clip there if you watch the two of them going on about that. Because I saw a tweet earlier this week, and I totally agreed with it, that Sansa won the popular vote, but Bran had the Electoral College.
Yeah. Sansa That's got complete independence and actually formed her own country. I think AOC and Liz Warren are completely off base here. Sansa is the real winner because she got to keep
her home. So when New England secedes from the United States and joins us here in the North, we'll know what that is.
That's exactly right.
I think it parallels Scotland, actually, or maybe even Ireland, right?
Yeah, that's probably closer, yeah. Yeah, so, okay, I have some questions. I'm going to throw these out to to the group and we can discuss. So,
Before we do that, I do have to acknowledge again, one thing, my favorite moment in this entire thing, there's a couple of favorite moments, but my favorite moment in this entire thing was when the uncle gets up and says,
yeah.
I have the most experience at this, I should be the one running, and Sansa says to him, Uncle, sit.
Yeah.
And he looks over at everybody else and they're all looking around.
They're laughing at him openly.
Not making eye contact. And then she just, with her head, she gestures to the chair and she tilts down.
Yeah.
Typical, like a mother would do that, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That was my favorite scene.
Yeah.
This is amazing.
Yeah. No, that was a lovely moment of levity in an otherwise sort of tense kind of thing.
For sure. So hit us with your questions.
Okay. Well, first I'm going to throw out mine. I'll throw in my two cents and then we'll get to our questions. So yes, I must admit, I kind of agree with you guys. I didn't think it was bad. I think I have more issues overall with the last two seasons overall than I do with the finale. I don't think the finale was the problem. I think it was, as we talked about in previous episodes, it's the pacing issue, right? We knew that Benioff and Weiss have other work to do. We know the actors wanted to get on with it. HBO would have taken 10 more seasons of this if they could have, but the reality is that you can't stretch those things out. Actors don't want to work on the same projects for this long, especially the ones who have established themselves as, you know, now A-list stars. They want to go do other things. So we were going to get what we're going to get. We're going to get a seven episode last season. We're going to get 6 episodes this season. It's impossible to properly capture the turns of events that they had, adequately explain how Daenerys is feeling, and not have it feel rushed when, you know, there are whole seasons about it taking somebody from point A to point B in previous seasons. To have somebody turn on a dime on some of these things, we were never going to be totally happy. And so that would be my only sort of mark against this whole series and its final episodes, is that I could see why people are frustrated with the decisions that people made and the accelerated timeline. Yes, it makes it seem very rash or sudden or unexpected. But again, if you follow the through line, especially as you know, guys were talking about, going back and watching the earlier episodes and watching how Daenerys acts, how Bran acts, how Jon acts, their conclusions are true to who they are from the beginning of the series onward. It's not perfect, but it's damned good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm, for sure. We have to wait for the extended box set. I'm sure there's like a lot of cutting room stuff, like, you know, the reaction to the Sansa and Arya learning about Jon and all that kind of stuff. We didn't see that.
Yeah, and again, it's some of those things they probably just didn't do because, again, you know, if you've only got 80 minutes to tell a story, you know, the highest quality, like, this is some of the best television that has ever been put on television as far as...
Agreed.
Filmmaking. These people made mini movies every week, especially this last couple of seasons. This is television on a scale we've never, ever seen before.
And we're in the era where everybody in the audience thinks they can write it better. And because of Twitter, everybody goes bonkers and they create these bullshit momentum waves because we're in an era where people just want to tweet while they're watching the show.
Yep.
I think that's what I think. This was my friend Bob Ackwitz said today that he thought that Game of Thrones was the first television series that turned the audience into auteurs.
Where everybody
felt like, well, they would have done it differently. And I get it, but I'm with you. I don't think that anybody else would have got the only finale I've ever seen that's been perfect, in my estimation, has been Breaking Bad.
Breaking Bad, absolutely.
You know, that was, I thought, in MASH, of course, but Breaking Bad was amazing. But Game of Thrones, you're right. How could they have, how else could they have done this?
Yeah. The only thing that caught me off guard about this finale as a finale was that it did not end in more tragic fashion because that's what this show has always been about. Subverting expectations. I guess the subversion in the grandest scale is that Jon decides he has to kill Dany, and so they felt that was sufficient as far as subversion, and they gave everybody else a very happy send-off. That is my only surprise in all this, is that we didn't get more tragedy. The fact that they actually gave Bronn Highgarden, the fact that they actually gave Sam his dream job of being a maester in King's Landing, the fact that, you know, so many, you know, Brienne gets to be the captain of the King's Guard, you know, that you know, Sansa gets her crown. Jon gets to go live in the north with the people he loves and live the kind of life he wanted. I'm surprised that everybody got so many happy endings for a show that was constantly, and we talked about the term last week, Tim, agony porn at times. Like, it was it was hard to watch some of that stuff. So that's my only sort of surprise in all this, is that we didn't end up with more, and that person died of dysentery 2 weeks later.
Yeah.
Well, that's how they subverted your expectations, by not subverting your expectations.
Honestly, you're right. It's bang on. Like, I think we were so set up to expect the worst that when it didn't, again, when it faded to black, I was like, huh, they didn't all die.
Yeah. Expectations subverted.
I could not.
Thought, oh man, they killed Sean Bean in the first season. So.
Yeah, I'm sure Bran probably planned it this way, you know?
From the start. I could not have handled. See, for a moment, I thought that when the White Horse showed up in the second last episode, I thought that Arya was dead. And this was, so I thought, oh, well, you killed Arya. That will make me mad. But they didn't kill her because they realized that we couldn't handle it, right? Yeah. So we wouldn't let us see.
Where was the horse in the beginning of this episode?
Yeah.
I think it finally died after about 50 feet.
Yeah, cinders probably took it apart for sure.
Yeah. All right, so here's a couple questions for you guys. So we talked about the scene where they're in the throne room, Jon makes the decision, he stabs Dany dies. Drogon, who we established right before that scene, is sleeping or becoming a snowbank downstairs, screams from down below. Jon thinks, ruh-roh. Drogon shows up in the throne room, gives Dany a poke. So are we supposed to infer from this that Drogon is a very intelligent creature, has this connection, psychic or otherwise, to Dany, knew when she died, and then in that moment made the decision, I'm mad so I'm going to burn anything around me, or I'm mad specifically because I knew that Dany was about this throne and I wanted to melt the throne? Are we supposed to get that that's a random act or a purposeful act?
I have thoughts on this, but I can wait. Anybody want to go first?
So first of all, I want to say that my dog can recognize the sound of my car as my wife drives up to the house. So he has this sixth sense, a sense around him.
Right.
I don't know if it's just the Honda CRV tuning or something weird about it, but he knows when she's driving up the road to the house. So that explains Drogon's connection to her, to Dany, you know, I assume. And he was acting like a dog. He was sort of poking at mom. Hey, mom, I need another bone kind of thing, right? But why the throne? I mean, the fact that he looked at Jon again comes back to that whole half Targaryen thing. I can't burn you because you're one of me or one of the clan or whatever, right?
So does he not burn Jon because he's a Targaryen? Does he not burn Jon because he realized that Jon did what had to be done?
I see it.
No,
I don't go that far.
No, it's instinctual. He didn't burn him because he's a Targaryen, and I don't know why he burned the throne, to be honest with you, but you know, that was just pathetic. What do you call it?
pathetic fallacy?
Justice or whatever.
Symbolism.
I think there's two ways that I would look at this, which is that Drogon, which is the laziest name ever for a dragon, Drogon either looked at the throne and said, if she can't have it, nobody can.
Right.
Right. The other part of me is that Drogon did not probably looked at it and went, that throne is why she's dead. Her chase for that throne is why she's dead. And that was his final way of just kind of, again, wiping that off and then taking her away. I think that dog was intuitive.
Yeah. So this leads me to a sort of a reflection. So if we're to infer that he's that intelligent, which I don't, you know, I think in previous works of fantasy fiction, we've established that dragons can be very intelligent. I guess it makes me think back to the previous episode where she was like, hey, let's go torch some children and people like that. Are we supposed to infer from that he was on board with the torching of the children and the people, or that he gave no active thought to that? Was he just obeying, or was he following orders? Was he just following orders?
I think like a dog, though, she says fire, he says fire, right? So, you know what I mean? Like a dog is trained to sit or roll over, you know, like she gives him one word commands. You know,
but it can't be as simple as you know, she gives him one word commands and he follows if he is also capable of the pathos of I'm going to destroy a throne. Because
but he doesn't look at a kid and say, I'm not going to burn that. That's an innocent child. He just goes fire, you know.
So I don't really ascribe to the more intelligent dragon theory here, but let's follow it since it's been brought up. If we follow the more intelligent dragon hypothesis, I think Drogon, given his actions throughout the series, is clearly on board with murder and mayhem. Like, it's part of his whole being and distinguished him from Viserion and Rhaegal, who didn't cause as many problems as he did, right? He was the dragon who, like, flew off and, like, killed kids and sheep and stuff, and Daenerys couldn't even get a hold of him and control of him for a while. He's the rebel. He's the Anakin Skywalker to her Palpatine of, like, kills.
But by that rationale, I'm okay, wouldn't he have been the one most likely to look at Jon and say, you just killed my rider, it's go time?
I'm not even sure he knew that. Like, if we go the smart dragon route, then yes, I think he would know it. And which is why I don't go down. I think, oh, he's more like Tim mentioned, like a dog, where like he knew somehow, or whether it's magic, empathic, or just like, hey, I've got this freaky sense that something bad, let me go see what's going on with mom. He goes, he's like, oh my gosh, she's dead. He absolutely is filled with rage. Like, I have to kill or destroy something. He looks at John and is like, I want to, but I can't for reasons. We can discuss what those reasons
for
are.
Reasons.
And this is like, okay, this throne is irritating me. I'm going to destroy this thing. Very similar to my own little dog, who when he gets upset, he's like, I got to go chew my new nylon bone. I just got this misdirected aggression has to be taken out on something.
And Jonathan, you own a dog. Like, don't you know that you train your dog in one room, he goes into another room, that all bets are off whether he'll follow the training?
I would say that my dog may be just a smidgen better organized of the mind than yours.
No, mine's crafty. He's tricky. He's tricksy. Yeah.
Yeah. No, mine is, he's a simple creature. As long as he's got a comfortable place to sleep, he's pretty good. He's pretty good. All right. I want to follow. Yeah. I want to follow this one up with the next inevitable question. So Jon's in the throne room. The dragon picks up Daenerys, flies off into the distance. He's now standing in the throne room with a pile of melted metal and blood all over his hands. And so the queen is dead. He literally must have walked out of that room, gone downstairs and confessed. Right.
Or Grey Worm was. Yeah. Grey Worm was. Yeah. Grey Worm was.
There's
down
no.
There.
There's no evidence. Like, there's nothing that could connect it to him. He could have just gone downstairs and said, "Listen, I don't know what to tell you guys. Dany's dead. She was sitting on the throne. Drogon came upstairs, burned the throne
stabbed
down.
Stabbed her in the chest.
Go upstairs and look. No, don't have to say stabbed her in the chest.
He stabbed her in the chest. She just was. In case she brings her back.
She was sitting. Yeah, really. In case he dropped her like 10 feet away from the wall. Yeah. He literally could have gone downstairs and said, "Hey, she was sitting in the throne. Drogon sneezed. Next thing I know, there's a pile of melted metal.
I told her no.
Yeah. And, you know, and my poor aunt, I mean, a girlfriend, I mean, queen is dead. And instead, he must have clearly walked to the bottom of the stairs and said, hey, Grey Worm, put me in shackles. I've just killed the queen. Can we talk about how dumb that is?
But John would do that, right? The man of honor. John followed Danny right to its absolute last moment. John's not that smart. He's just instinctive. So I think that he I mean, also, John is, let's be honest, died once. So he's a different kind of person. person. So he, honor is such a big thing to him that he would probably walk down and said to Grey Worm, I did it to save us all. I did it because I had to.
Yeah. And how in that moment does Grey Worm not just immediately kill him?
Yeah, no, no.
That's the part I like. How at that point are they like, you know what? They are the ones in power. Tyrion's not there. There's no more Jorah. There's no more Missandei. Nothing is stopping the Unsullied and the Dothraki. How in the hell would the Dothraki and the Unsullied not have just ripped him to shreds on the spot, as opposed to being like, all right, you're going to your room for a while, Jon Snow, because you know nothing?
Is it possible that Grey Worm deep down understood this, and he understood what Dany did was wrong, and he had a moment of his own personal growth where he just kind of went, okay, I have to kill you because you are, or I have to bring you to justice because you killed our queen. But deep down, he knew that this carnage was unnecessary.
Yeah, but 10 minutes ago, he was slicing people's throats.
He was literally slicing throats down on the street before that. And Jacob Anderson, in that scene when he's got Tyrion at the Dragon Pit and they're talking about Jon Snow's fate, mm-hmm. As Grey Worm, is playing the hell out of, like, I am so mad I could spit.
Yeah, guys, we've all had that moment. We're in the moment of a battle and we just can't see clearly, and we finish the killing and then we come to our senses.
That happens at least every other weekend, really.
That's right.
All right, topic number three, and this is my favorite. How harsh was it that they had to bring up Bran's dick at the Dragon Pit meeting?
That was the best meme I saw all week.
Yeah, so I also saw somebody said they don't watch Game of Thrones, but calling him Bran the Broken is, like, politically incorrect.
Yeah, yes, that's true. And it's funny because they deliberately call him that. Like, I get that Tyrion using that as an understanding of why his story is good, but then to keep referring to him, to his face, as Bran the Broken after that seemed a little unnecessary, but not as unnecessary as them pointing out that his dick doesn't work anymore.
And by the way, his sister, no less, right?
Yeah!
His sister.
How would she know?
Yeah. Did that come up? I mean, he was really kind of keeping to himself up in Winterfell. At what point were they like, but by the way, we know your back and your legs don't work properly anymore. Can we talk about your dick?
Yeah.
You know I want to publish this show, right?
Well, you can bleep those ones. I laughed out loud at the moment because it's meant to be a little bit funny. But man, harsh. Like, they're literally, and then like 2 minutes later, the dude is named King of the Six Kingdoms. Like,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah. The other one I have is, so part of the discussion in the last season, two seasons ago, was that the Greyjoys, Theon and Yara, go across the sea to Essos to meet with Daenerys. And they basically say, our uncle Euron has taken over the Iron Islands. We want to get them back. We'll pledge our forces to you. And in exchange, we'd also like to be an independent kingdom again. And Daenerys says, cool, I can do that. And then somebody says to her, well, what if the other ones want to be independent? She says, they can ask. So then we get to the Dragon Pit, and they're having this discussion about who should be the king. And Sansa says, you know what? I'm out. I don't want to be part of your party anymore. I am the queen of the North. I'm out. How at that point does Yara not also stand up and go, ditto? And the Prince of Dorne, which if anybody has read the books, Dorne was the longest holdout in joining the Seven Kingdoms. They lasted 100 years after everybody else, and actually fought so hard that they got to keep the honorific of princes and princesses of Dorne, even though they are part of they are subjects of the kingdom. How did they not all in turn stand up at that point and go, hey, how about we just dissolve the kingdom?
True, yeah.
That's a good point. I mean, maybe because they didn't all feel the way Sansa did about the North that they thought was special. That's my only thing. But you're right. Otherwise, I can't think of a good reason why they wouldn't, except that they put so much energy into developing Sansa as the future queen that they didn't put enough time into that. They didn't develop that part enough.
Yeah. It feels like one of those sort of glaring plot holes that we'll never get a real resolution to. I imagine George R. R. Martin, if he finally finishes his last couple of books, may sort of wrap up to more satisfying sense. But that one really stepped out for me as, you know, how does Sansa get the nerve to stand up and say, you know what, I'm out, and not have everybody else go, why didn't we think of that?
Well, she's Bran's sister, so...
Yeah, but Yara had already made the play for independence. I'm surprised she wasn't the first one to stand up to Dany. So why wouldn't she do it in this case? Like, by what right would somebody be able to say no? As a matter of fact, I'm surprised it lasted those 3 weeks in between before all those places didn't go, by the way, we're free now. Like, we're our own country again.
Yeah, I think with the Iron Islands and Dorne, there might be some weaknesses, particularly post-war, to consider where now a whole bunch of the Iron Fleet was blown up.
Yep.
And the Iron Islands, like, they go out and raid and pillage because they really can't grow much on the islands themselves, so they're kind of dependent upon that. They're not self-sufficient.
Yeah.
And I also wonder if Dorne...
So trade is
like,
what you're
saying. The guy from Dorne was like a dude because I forget her name, like Larya Sand, I forget what her name was, like had killed like the rightful ruler, and she herself was, and her daughters were all taken care of. Like the whole lineage has been broken up in Dorne.
Yeah.
So dude number five from Dorne is probably like, yeah, I'm okay being a lord of my little area and not pushing for independence because I, who knows what my situation is going
to
be like.
Right. Yeah. All right. Last question. What would they have had to have offered to Bronn after giving him Highgarden to come back and live in King's Landing and work as the master of coin?
Yeah. And why him as the master of coin? What does he know about finances?
Yeah. I mean, we can talk again more about the small council, that whole makeup. How did Sam end up going from I quit the Citadel to I am now Grand Maester inside the Red Keep now? How did that happen? In 3 weeks, he's got a chain on. He's got robes on. He's on the small council. Like in 3 weeks,
and he hasn't shaved at all. Like he hasn't aged at all. Right. So it's obviously like 3 weeks later, not a year later or whatever. Right.
Do we consider Bronn a decent character, like a decent person?
No.
Right. So he's the only
he's
the only non decent one on that council then, because everybody else, you know, it reached a point of piety almost. We know what Brienne was all about and her commitment to Sansa. So I can see that Tyrion is really smart and knows that it's better to keep his enemies close and people who would complicate his life. That's my only thinking as to why he would be there, because Bronn can be the fly in the ointment. And if you keep him close, you can see what he's up to.
Well, I guess Littlefinger was the master of coin before that, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And that was a pretty rough dude for sure.
Yeah.
Hmm. What do you think, Jaime?
I was trying to think. I was going to say, because Bronn has all the gold, but he actually doesn't, because they raided Highgarden and brought it all to King's Landing to pay off the Golden Company, or sorry, the Iron Bank.
Yep.
So I'm not sure where all the gold is now. Maybe they looted it off the Golden Company folks.
Yep.
I can see that.
So,
yeah.
So how do we end this show now?
Well, I guess I want to
fade to black.
I want to touch on that one note that I put into our notes there before we get to that. So I think the easiest speculation coming out of this was there's a lot of places, if say perchance HBO wanted to break the glass and recycle the future of Game of Thrones. Now we know they're going to do some prequels. There's a bunch of different shows in development. They're not going to let this franchise not continue because money. How long before they throw a boatload of money at one of the stars, the Stark kids or whatever, to reprise their roles? The obvious one seems to be Maisie Williams, because she sort of strikes out on her own. If you pay her, you know, $10 million an episode 10 years from now to reprise her role somewhere in a new land of that world, does she come back and play that part? Because we last see her sailing off into the distance as, you know, I'm going to go discover the undiscovered country. So the question is, you know, is there something there? So the answer in the short term, at least, came this week. So the HBO's president of programming, Casey Bloys, talked to the Hollywood Reporter, and everyone said, hey, you know, well, the question was put to him, you know, does Arya's ending mean we're going to see a spinoff with Baizi? And he said, no, no, no. He said, nope, 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 no. Part of it is I want to do this show, this Game of Thrones, Dan and David's show, to be its own thing. I don't want to take characters from this world that they did beautifully and put them off into another world with someone else creating it. I want to let it be the artistic piece they've got. That's one of the reasons why I'm not trying to do the same show over. George has a massive, massive world. There's so many ways in. That's why we're trying to do things that feel distinct and not try to redo the same show. That's probably one of the reasons why right now a sequel or picking up any of the other characters doesn't make sense for us. I agree with his sentiment, but how long do you think they can hold off when there's going to be a nonstop clamor for a reprisal of something from this world?
I think you're right. It's going to take years. It'll take years. But like tonight, when we're recording this, Woody Harrelson is playing Archie Bunker in a live All in the Family, right? So I think it depends on one thing practically, which is how does Maisie's career go? What else does she do? And the other part is in a handful of years, it would be the biggest TV event ever if we get 27-year-old Arya. Like that would be a monster television event, and the money might be just too big for them to ignore.
Yeah,
true. I have to say, I was actually disappointed. Other than her ninja move on the White Walkers, you know, when she killed the Night King, I was a little disappointed we didn't get any of the Faceless Man kind of ninja stuff that she did in the last couple of series, right?
Yeah, but she did kill the Night King. What more can we ask from her? She was tired.
Yeah, that's a pretty high note to go out on.
Well, we were hoping she was going to do Sansa or Cersei or Danny or something, you know, like something.
You know what? I bet you if this was a
maybe that was
if this
her,
was 10
not
seasons.
Jon Snow.
If this was a 10 season Game of Thrones and they played out the last full 10 episode seasons to the end, I think they could have gotten more into that stuff. But man, how do you fit that in? Like, they shoehorned so much stuff. The pacing in this was so far off of what we're used to in Game of Thrones. How could you squeeze that in?
Oh, but if she had, if after Jon killed Danny, if we cut to Jon somewhere else and then back to Jon with the bloody knife and then she takes the face mask off. Oh my God.
Oh my God, George, you got my money. Take all my money.
That would have been so great. Tim, you're onto it, man. That's a great idea.
Somebody get Benioff and Weiss on the phone.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, I do think that it will be interesting to see what they do, because if you look at the reaction videos online and, you know, people are watching it at bars and other big gatherings, and one of the biggest cheering moments, like somebody scored the game-winning touchdown in the Super Bowl moments, is when Arya stabs the Night King.
So great.
Yeah. And the second one is when Jon pets Ghost at the very end.
So great.
People are so happy. So I think they should take a page out of what CBS is doing with Star Trek, do in a different series, like, I don't know, like an animated series or something, kind of like the Lower Decks sort of series we've talked about for Star Trek.
Arya the Explorer.
And do the Ghost and Drogon, like, buddy cop show.
God, that'd be amazing.
But you can decide how canonical it is.
I love that.
Yeah, for sure. All right, well, listen, we're way over time here, so we should jump to the watch list and kind of whip through that if we can. So, Jaime, you got the first thing on here? And it's a Game of Thrones related thing, so there you go.
Yeah, it's a tweet by Dan Olson, who has a really good series on, or channel on YouTube called Folding Ideas, where he does a lot of screen and screenplay analysis. And he's got a John Hughes-style ending to Game of Thrones that I think is fun for folks who watched some of those movies in the 80s. I think it's worth a shot, and it gives you the, like, where did everybody end up with the little text underneath sort of thing.
Yeah, love that. You see that in a lot of movies, for sure.
Yeah.
So what else you got, Jaime?
The other one was, I was out last week on a work trip in Portland, but me and some of my coworkers got out to see What We Left Behind, the Star Trek Deep Space Nine documentary. One night only. It was fantastic. But don't worry. Apparently, there will be Blu-rays and or DVDs available soonish, I hope. I don't actually know when, but they do mention it. So if you didn't get a chance to go out and see it, I'd say wait for that. It was great to see, you know, interviews with the cast. It was kind of cool that they actually brought the writers back together and they sort of prototyped out, oh, what if we were to do season 8, episode 1? What would that be like? And with a little bit of visualization, storyboard, and animatics for that. And of course, the sort of crown jewel was the, I think it was like 20 minutes of HD remastered video for Deep Space Nine. Something like the Sacrifice of Angels battle was just like amazing on the big screen and with crystal clarity of HD.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Well, so I got three here, actually. So I finally got around to watching Hereditary, which was supposed to be this amazing, you know, horror movie. So I got myself all primed up and I was in a good place. I was ready to watch this movie and have, you know, the bejesus scared out of me. I got about halfway through and then it got so predictable that I wonder if it was actually a comedy. Have you guys seen the movie?
I've not.
Nope. I have seen it, yes.
So when it gets to the part where about the occult, I mean, maybe I just don't believe in the occult or whatever, but I mean, like there's this accident that happens in the middle of the movie. I'm not going to spoil it for people, but which is just amazing and off the hook, right, George?
Oh, bro, that was so traumatic.
Yeah, and then it moves into the sort of occult. Well, maybe I'm giving away too much by saying the occult, but at that point, they kind of lost me. Like, it kind of, you know, I was watching this movie and I'm thinking it wants to be Rosemary's Baby, right? But it's coming off more like Event Horizon, and you know how I feel about Event Horizon, you know?
I'm a big fan of the Eight Kings of Hell. So to see one represented in the film, I liked it. But it didn't carry the same tension that the trailer did.
Yeah.
You know, but that scene you're talking about, that accident scene, was just overwhelming. And I think that just kind of, that stuck with me for the whole film.
Yeah, well, for sure. I mean, they do a sort of Quentin Tarantino. You don't really see what happens and you're not really sure what's happening and they don't reveal it till much later, right? So that was really good. But yeah, I think they if they had kept with that momentum, I might have been have been really, really happy with the movie. But I watched it till the end because I figured, okay, I'm here, I might as well watch it. But yeah, they had lost me when Toni Collette, what's her name? Toni Collette's, starting to lose it a bit, in the movie. Yeah, interesting. The other thing was, I don't know what, I have a special place in my life for death around me, as some people know, but a friend of mine recommended this series called Dead to Me, which stars Christina Applegate and I've forgotten her name now.
Linda Cardellini.
I think we talked about it on the show here, but I definitely highly, highly recommend binging this one. Like 30-minute episodes, you'll be done in like 2-3 hours kind of thing. 10 episodes. Super, super hilarious. It starts with Christina Applegate's husband has just been killed in a hit and run, and she's got this amazing attitude that unlike any, a female character in any movie where something like as devastating as this has happened to her, it just plays up great. So I definitely recommend Dead to Me. I don't know if you guys have seen it at all. Or
I think it was just passed by Riverdale as the most watched. Like Riverdale is now the most watched Netflix show, but for its run, Dead to Me was the number one show.
How long has it been out?
Only a couple of weeks. Sherry just binged the whole thing. My wife.
Really, really.
Yeah.
I mean, the ending is kind of typical. I was kind of wondering what was going to happen at the very end, but when it did pay off, it was a bit surprising. But of course, it leads into the next season. How could you have it? You need this type of ending to have a next season. I'm not going to give anything away there.
Well, Netflix is very invested in having people hooked onto their new series now, since they're, as we talked about last week, a lot of their content is going bye-bye.
The cupboards are getting bare. Yeah. Yes, yeah. Yes. And my last one was, last night I sat down and watched Happy Time Murders, which is the Jim Henson's son's movie, mm-hmm. I think, right? Something to do with Muppets. It basically has, I don't know if they are officially Muppets or not, but it's about this world where puppets, as they call them in the show, and humans live. So it's kind of like Alien Nation, that kind of thing, where these two people used to be cops. One's a puppet, one's not. One has, part puppet, she has a puppet liver, and it's whole sort of, I don't know, there's another word for it, but racist kind of attitudes towards puppets in society, and but totally told, like, it's a comedy and a tragedy at the same time. It's totally worth watching. And of course, it's a vehicle for, I can't remember her name now.
Melissa McCarthy.
No,
that movie was not what I thought it was when I saw the poster at all. And I put it on, and like 2 seconds in, I went, what is this, man? It was a real shocker.
Yes, definitely don't. I love the drugs are actually sugar candy. Yeah. All right. Over to you, John.
I got a couple things. So one of my favorite animated series is about to start its final season. Archer 1999. The final season starts May 29th. And there's a couple of really great goofy trailers. Anybody who's a fan of the show knows each season sort of has a different motif. They've done noir. They've done sort of a disco era. They've done, a high adventure. This one is going to be set in space. We're still not clear how it's all going to wrap up because we're not entirely sure how it keeps lurching from place to place, but it never fails to make me laugh. It is such a weird, goofy, funny series. So many talented people working on it behind the scenes, and I can't wait to see how they wrap up the Archer world. So I'm dying for that one.
How many seasons has it been on?
I think this is the, I want to say 9th or 10th season. 10th season.
Wow.
Yes. Hmm. Now, again, a season for them is, I think, 10 episodes.
Okay, sure.
But the other seasons are on Netflix here in Canada. I don't know about the States, but it's one of those shows where once you start wading into it, it's hard not to want to keep watching because it's really funny.
I interviewed Aisha Tyler about it, and she said to me it was her first experience ever where she read the scripts and they were so far over the line. And then when the network read the scripts, the network said to the writers, I think you could go further.
Whoa.
Yeah. And she was like, what? The writers went, what? And the network said, yeah, push more. Don't be afraid.
So because it's FXX, right? It's Fox's adult brand. So they wanted envelope pushing. This is, they're the same ones that bring us Legion and some of the weirder Fargo, some of the edgier, weirder side of their storytelling.
Wow. All right.
But it's genuinely, borders are pushed in a regular occurrence on that show. A lot of innuendo, a lot of dirty jokes, but it's always funny.
Right.
And the last thing I've got in here is they've got a trailer this week for Black Mirror Season 5, which is coming in a scant week and a half to Netflix.
Wow.
June the 5th is coming. So we'll have the link in our show notes to the trailer. Yeah, I mean, that series never seems to disappoint. That I can't say every single episode has knocked my socks off, but there's almost always a gem or two in every season. So I'm curious to see what they've come up with this year.
Yeah, and some big names acting in that one too.
Absolutely. Sure. Yeah, Miley Cyrus is the big face of this one. That she's in one of the episodes. So
spoilers, come on.
Well, she's the first thing you see in the trailer.
Oh, okay. Well, I haven't seen the trailer yet. Yeah. All right. So, George, do you have anything to send our fans away with? Something to watch? Something you're interested in?
Yeah. It was a big announcement this week was that in the fall we're going to get the new season of Rick and Morty. And
this is like
I don't know. You know, as a completely non-theist, I don't know what Catholics feel like when they get a new pope. But to find out, we're going to get another season. So here's what I would recommend. Obviously, to watch the three seasons of Rick and Morty, you got to watch them several times. But the thing that I would tell people to do is go on YouTube and watch the hidden messages inside Rick and Morty videos. There are hundreds of them, but there's so much meta information, metadata in this series, in the background to the series, that I have currently been watching. Like, I'm just watching them all. Fan theories and conspiracy theories about stuff in the background of Rick and Morty. Watch those and get ready for when the next season starts.
Yeah, it's fabulous. I watch it whenever it's on. I just sit down and watch. I've watched it completely out of order. Never had it, you know, never watched it in series, but every episode stands on its own for sure.
Yep.
Great cartoon. All right. Well, I guess that's it for another week. Yeah.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, no worries. So that's it for another week. So, Jaime, if people want to get in touch with you, how would they do that?
I'm on Twitter as @devwiththehair.
All right. And Jonathan, if people want to get in touch with you?
I'm on Twitter and Instagram as @JPKNews.
George, how can people get in touch with you?
I'm on Twitter and Instagram as @Strombo.
That's right. And you have this little radio show you do?
Strombo Show.
All right. CBC Music, I believe, right?
That's right. Every Sunday night.
Sunday nights. And we have an app. All right. My name is Tim Mitra, TimMitra. On the Twitter machine is the best way to get a hold of me. So until next time, we'll see you in the future.
Thanks, guys.
Bye-bye. Let's go, Raptors.
If you want to find out more about the podcast or see the episode show notes, visit the SpockCast website at SpockCast.com. You can get in touch with us on the website or follow us on Twitter at SpockCast. If you have feedback or questions, send us a tweet with the hashtag AskSpockCast. If you like the show, please consider recommending us to a friend, writing a review on iTunes, or pledging any amount at patreon.com/SpockCast. You can find details on how to help us out on our website at spotcast.com/sponsor us. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in the future.
George, are they going to win the series?
Oh, man, I don't know. I don't know, but I think that game four was the best defensive. I think game four was the most complete Raptor game I've ever seen in my life. I used to be an NBA reporter the first few years the Raptors were in existence, so I would sit courtside. My job was to cover the visiting dressing room, so I had the Barkley Jordan era, and every team had Hall of Fame players, and we would watch some really neat teams come in and play. But what happened in game four, that Raptor, that thing was out of this world. So I don't know if there's another one of those in them, and I can't tell how badly hurt Kawhi is.
Yeah.
Oh, he got hurt? Oh, no.
Yeah, he tweaked his leg again.
And the thing, too, and, you know, going to Milwaukee, the refereeing is so terrible in that league.
I know.
I'm really, it's the one thing that makes watching b-ball almost impossible is the hometown reffing. And I just hope Drake goes and sits courtside and continues to irritate everybody. But, you know, yes, I do think we can win the series because we showed that the Bucks were completely befuddled by the Raptors' defensive pressure. They could not handle that pace. The Raps can do that for those two more games, we're going to Oakland.
Okay, so then the follow-up question is there a chance in hell against Oakland?
I think so. I think there is, because I think Kawhi, that close, in his home state, and, you know, Golden State is obviously this incredible team, but they're not a perfect team anymore. So they can be beat. I actually think we could beat them, but that's mostly if Kawhi but everybody's got to be be, you know, you have to have four guys in double digits every night if the Raps want to do that. But I think defensively we can do it. And I think that I think Kawhi is just out of control. We're watching one of those really special moments in Canadian sports that we have a guy like Kawhi here. So I think that they can beat them. I don't think it's likely, but I think they can.
I guess it depends if they get KD back. I mean, I think as it is right now, there's a big FU KD thing going on in Golden State. They seem to be playing with a real chip on their shoulder. I mean, you look at Curry's numbers. Was it 37-36 for a four-game sweep? I don't give them a snowball's chance in hell. That team looks just like they looked like they did 4 years ago before KD joined them. It's sick.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I hear KD is going to possibly go to the Clippers too. So it's, and if that happens, that's where Kawhi was expected to end up.
Well, they have enough cap room to get both of them too, which is even more terrifying.
And then LeBron. Oh my God, can you imagine LeBron in LA having to contend with that?
The third biggest star in LA basketball, which I don't think would sit well with him.
No, that's true. But I do think we can beat him. I think we can, and I don't think those guys can be that hot forever.
Yeah, I don't know. Steph Curry's been hot for about 5 years now, so
it must fade. Doesn't it fade at some point? That's what I'm hoping.
All dynasties eventually crumble. I mean, there's no way to keep it going. But boy, they have looked so good. Now again, the competition in the West wasn't as hot as it has been the last few years, and you know they kind of steamrolled a spicy team from Portland. But man, that it's not looking so hot. Hi, Mary, you watching any of this?
Yeah, so it was in Portland, and folks wanted to watch the games, of course, for the Blazers. I was rooting for the Blazers, you know, sort of a Seattle doesn't have a team, so this is the closest thing I can go on to.
That's a tragedy that, A, that you don't have a team, and B, that you're forced to root for the Blazers.
Yeah, it was like a weird surrogacy sort of thing. And I do agree with the feistiness of the Blazers. The Blazers showed that the Warriors, as fantastic as they are, because they, you know, swept the Blazers, but they were down by double digits pretty late several times.
Yep.
So there are weaknesses to the Golden State Warriors that I think whoever ends up in the finals against them can exploit.
Yeah.
I would not look past Giannis and the Bucks, though. I've seen Giannis play in Portland. That dude is a beast. So I would not, you know, look too far yet and just make sure you get through the series first before thinking about the finals and the matchup.
Yeah.
Well, this is the furthest the Raptors have ever gone in the playoffs, right, so far?
Yeah. Well, they made it to the East Finals 2 years ago, too, but that was less of a contest. It feels like they weren't quite as in it as they are this time.
Yeah, it would be interesting just to see them go all the way just for the sake of seeing that happen.
Yeah, I don't know. Is it better to make the finals and lose to one of the greatest, probably the second best team in the history of basketball? I mean, you can argue them versus the Celtics teams from the 60s, but I mean, the run they're putting on it's arguably historic. Is it better to be part of the history of making it to the finals and losing to a team like that, or is it better to not be the team that gets pounded like that?
Oh no, you go in there and you shake them. You go in there and you shake them. I think they have to get to the final. Raptors need this. Also, if they don't get to the final, the Kawhi trade was always the loss, right? The benchmark has always been you're going to trade DeMar for Kawhi. You got to make the final.
So if is there any chance Kawhi comes back? And if so, does it depend on them making the final?
I think he can come back. I think we can offer more money than anybody else, right?
Yeah, but I mean, he could have gotten even more money if he'd stayed in San Antonio because he could have got the Supermax. So money's clearly not the issue.
Yeah, I think it's so unlikely that he stays. So unlikely, but
you don't care. You're going to be in LA half the time. You're going to see him there.
Yeah, but I can't root for the Clippers. So I am. No, I think there's a chance. I think of all the players that I've talked to that it's, you know, for everybody on Twitter who rips Drake for Drake's involvement, the thing is this, the Raptors aren't the Raptors without Drake. Drake changed the complete feel of this team. The way the NBA players feel about Toronto now, it's completely different, and it's 1,000,000% because of Drake. And people don't want to admit it, but Drake is the reason the Raptors are, of course, Masai is an amazing manager, but Drake's the reason why this place is exciting for other ball players. And so I think that if Kawhi stays, Drake's going to play a role.
Do you think that if he decides to depart, they go into full rebuild mode, or do they actually try and run it back?
That's a great question, man. I don't know. I think if they win the title, he leaves, because if Raps win, he's given us everything he needs to give. Then he can go play in his hometown. But then that's a really good question. I think that the Raps always, their philosophy, at least from my information and when I've talked to some of the higher ups. There's some really great kids out there that get drafted. He's like, we don't have to try to get them in their first year. Let's wait for another team to develop them, and we'll get them when they become free agents. So Masai was thinking the free agent game the whole way. And this Gasol Kawhi partnership has been so impactful for them. And of course, Pascal, who's, you know, the most improved player. I don't know that you can rebuild this. You win the title, like you got to go for it again.
Yeah, but what if you flame out in six or seven games in the East Final and lose your best player?
Yeah, that's a really tough thing. That's a really tough thing.
All right, well, we'll have to wrap it up there, guys. All right, thanks, guys.
All right, always a pleasure, guys.
Okay, bye.
Talk to you later.
See ya.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.